Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is July 30th, 2012. Today on the show, this is the live show from last Thursday night. My guest was Kate Baker. This is an edited down version of that show. And if you want to see the whole thing, all of the callers and all of the different digressions, you can find it on the School Sucks Podcast YouTube channel. Segment by segment, there is a playlist for this show, entirely unedited. But I don't like putting unedited stuff up into the podcast feed, so I trimmed this one down to a little bit less than an hour. And Kate and I wound up having a spirited discussion, a little bit of debate when I tried to bring in some of the history of public schooling in America. And we had a few callers, and the topic and the direction of the show that I intended, it just never really materialized. And that's fine. What I'm going to do is put together a separate podcast, non-live. Remember those. They're coming back, I promise. I want to talk more about No Child Left Behind in the context of the topics that we've been covering for the last couple weeks, specifically the control, the centralized control over education in America in the latter half of the 20th century and in now to the 21st century with No Child Left Behind and the behind-the-scenes plans. We're going to discuss that and also tie in behaviorism one more time before we move on to some more positive topics that will be happening this Thursday. So that's it. I hope you enjoy this show. Thanks for listening. If you want to see the after show that's mentioned, Brian Hagan and I, Brian, the host of the Fajita Funtime podcast, we do a two-hour exploration into Alex Jones. Is he disinformation on purpose or just by accident? We actually have Alan Murdoch. He calls in from the Libertarian Skeptic, and it's a very interesting discussion. If you subscribe, if you become a monthly subscriber, I'm still like 65 people short of where I would like to be for that. I will send you that show. I will send you the video. Even without the new website being up, you can get a sneak peek at these after shows that we have been working on for the sole purpose of producing additional content for people who contribute to the show every month. So $6 a month, we'll say within the next 7 days. How's that sound? We'll get you an email with that show in it. I'll send it to everybody who's already subscribing as well. That's it. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is Brett. I'm here tonight with Kate Baker. You might remember Kate if you've been listening for some time to School Sucks. She was on episode 40. The name of that show was Transition. And we discussed the possibility of non-government solutions to public education. Well, now Kate is about to take over as the executive director of the Network for Educational Opportunity. And Kate, you want to tell us a little bit about what the Network for Educational Opportunity is and what you are going to be doing there?
Okay. The Network for Educational Opportunity is an organization. It's a nonprofit, actually a 501c3, that helps families to find options, education options for their children that may be better options than the public schools or different options. For example, supporting homeschoolers and helping them with ideas or solutions, helping people start private schools or alternative schools, basically supporting independent education in general. And my task as the executive director is going to be to implement the school choice legislation in New Hampshire. So New Hampshire just passed a scholarship tax credit where a business can make a donation to a scholarship organization. Mm-hmm. And the scholarship organization can give that money to kids choice education options. So they may want to choose to go to a private school, and that scholarship could be towards their tuition. So the business, the benefit to the business is they get a tax credit. So against their BET and BPT, different kind of taxes that they would otherwise pay to the state of New Hampshire, now they can take a tax credit and give the money to kids school education, tuition.
Now,
so my job's implementing that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So now, when people hear that phrase, school choice,
okay,
what they hear sometimes, or something that they've been, I think, they've learned to associate with school choice, and something I've certainly been critical of on the show in the past, is vouchers.
Okay. Well, the legislation that we have in New Hampshire is very different from a voucher.
Yeah.
A voucher would be dollars that would come from the state.
Yeah.
To a school, usually. And this is a scholarship program. And so the businesses donate to the 501c3, and the 501c3 awards the scholarships to children. And
right.
So it's not money that's being taken from anywhere or going through the state, or it's not like it was state money that's going somewhere else. It just never goes there. It's from people, individuals, businesses.
So voluntarily
donated for children's tuitions.
Money changing hands voluntarily in education, huh?
Yes, because people want children to have options.
Right.
There's a lot of schools that aren't necessarily a good fit for some kids. They need to go to a different school. Currently, there's a lot of families that can't afford tuition.
Yeah.
And so this is a way that you can help a child to afford tuition at a school that might be a better fit for them.
Yeah. And so this is revolutionary, because one of the things that I've been so critical of about vouchers is, I say, this is the big suck-in. This is how they get everything under the control of state departments of education, the federal department of education, the NEA, and just kind of like looking forward.
I mean, I don't know. That's pretty extreme, because I think a voucher is an improvement.
Okay.
From geographic assigning of children to a school based on where they live, which is what we currently have, right? So if you live in a particular neighborhood, you go to that neighborhood school. You have no other options, right?
Sure. Okay.
And so a voucher, I think, is an improvement over that. Even though what we have in New Hampshire is not anywhere close to a voucher system, I would think that it's an improvement if it was a state that has a voucher over a standard no choice at all.
Sure.
I mean, you can say that it's more control. I get that, but
do you think I should have a tinfoil hat on while I say that what would probably, I mean, if you look at the powers that be in the institution of education in this country today, you couldn't see when money, which is taxpayer money, but once the taxpayers turn it over to the government, they say, this is public money. These are public resources. And now we're giving them to these unaccountable public private schools. So they have to be brought under our control.
See, I mean, in this case, in New Hampshire, the way it is it's the families that are making choices for their own children.
Yeah.
And so it's totally separate and different from what you're discussing.
Yeah.
Although I would say that because it's come from the individuals to begin with, their tax dollars for their children's education, or whoever, you pay taxes for other people's kids' education.
Sure,
that,
property
that
owners.
Individuals yeah. really do have the best possible judgment for their own kids, especially.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
And again, you know, my whole thinking, I mean, I'm a real idealist in this respect. And I know that you and I have talked before, and you're more than happy with the incremental approach. And you are.
I'm not more than happy with it. I mean, I live in the real world here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I live on this earth, and there's things that happen around me, and I yeah. see them, and I feel like I need to help
yeah.
with the solution.
So, yeah, but what you were saying is, as you know, you look at what the Network for Educational Opportunity might be able to do in the
yeah.
next couple of years.
Yes.
I mean, hundreds of kids saved from this system. That's significant. You know, to those kids, to those families, that really matters. I'm all about, you know, freedom starts on a personal level. And if you are talking about getting rid of the Department of Education and ending the Fed and taking on the military-industrial complex, you're putting yourself in a position where you're going to feel frustrated, you're going to feel powerless.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, but what I'm saying, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
Because I think you do wind up, I think a lot of times people wind up really burned out when they don't start, with themselves.
Okay,
so
I see.
If, as soon as I understand the philosophy of liberty, I think what I'll do is I'll go and fight against the Federal Reserve, one of the most powerful organizations in the entire world.
Okay.
You know.
I mean, or like me, choose to help children to possibly get them a better education.
Right.
I know that some public schools don't work. Okay. Like, I think I saw an article that said, it's in my pile, 70% of the schools in the state are designated as needs improvement. I mean, 70%. So, I mean, I just think there's probably some alternatives for those kids that would be better for them in the long run.
Who designates needs improvement?
Oh, well, of course, that would be, let's see. I think that's Big Brother. I think that's the federal government, perhaps.
Yeah, isn't it under No Child Left Behind?
Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the state does the testing, but yeah.
So that's by their standards,
I mean, of course.
Right?
I mean, so, we can talk about other reasons why kids should be able to choose what school they go to.
Oh, absolutely. I totally
agree. I mean,
it's
not just because the test scores are poor at public schools.
Right. So you obviously landed yourself in this position by having probably like a considerable amount of success doing this stuff before, right? Like, you've been involved in this fight for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I just helped. I like to work with people to start schools.
Yeah.
And I started a parent support group for gifted kids in 2004.
Yeah.
And so I worked with a lot of people that were having a difficult time with the public schools and helping them to figure out alternatives for their own kids. So it's very similar to what I've been doing continually.
Excellent.
All along.
We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back. I'm here with Kate Baker tonight. If you want to join our conversation, 843, join SSP Skype and School Sucks Live. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live for July 26, 2012. If you're interested in joining our conversation, we're going to be talking a little bit about educational politics, not a subject that I jump into too much on this show, but I have the best person to do it with, my old friend Kate Baker. You probably remember her if you've been listening for a while. She's been on the show before. 843-JOIN-SSP is the number if you want to call us on the phone. We have a Skype at School Sucks Live, and we'd be happy to have you join the conversation. So, Kate, I wanted to get into the first article that we talked about during the week. It's called New Hampshire Will Request a Waiver from No Child Left Behind.
I mean, that's where I pulled that data from that you're just like, pow, pow. You're like, that's not data.
That's what I do to government data. I punch it with sound effects. So the reason why I thought this was interesting is the last couple shows, we've been talking about the centralization and systematization of education in the United States, going back over a century. When you have an institution that people believe to be a noble institution.
I mean, sure, helping kids, teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are always going to be the types of people, you know, who want to control the world, who want to shape society for what they think is the best, whether they could really tell themselves a story like it's good, or they could have malevolent intentions and just not care. But for over a century, we've seen people who thought they were smart enough or special enough to try and mold children into what certain elites and controllers and managers of society wanted them to be.
At some point, we did have decentralized education in the United States.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I think it started with a more centralized plan where, you know, they went to Prussia and Horace Mann brings back the Prussian model of education, which was
the desks, right?
Yeah, desks and rows.
In a row.
Very much about obedience, very much about state worship. And
oh, come on. I mean,
it is. It absolutely is.
I mean, I don't like the desks and the rows, okay? I'll go with that.
But regimentation, conformity,
because I don't like direct instruction. I don't feel like that really works all the time.
That was their model because they had to teach those things.
Mm-hmm.
That was what it was important to them. And in Prussia, they needed an obedient military to expand their kingdom. So this was the model they came up with to do that. Now, Horace Mann loves it. And he says, oh, we'll just bring it to the United States and use it for good stuff. True story.
Because that's what we do in the United States.
Yeah, we use it for good.
Right.
So, you know, that's the middle of the 1800s.
Sure.
John Dewey gets his hands on it, you know, and he's more of a left-wing socialist type. And he says, you know, we need to use this to plan the economy of the future, where people need to be interdependent. We need to have workers. And, I mean, certainly he thinks he has the best of intentions. I believe Horace Mann probably thought he had the best of intentions.
Yeah, but is it really possible that they could exhibit that much control over an entire system?
Their influence.
I mean,
absolutely.
Could they really have that much influence as one individual or someone with an idea?
Yeah, I think that ideas have been the most influential thing in shaping policy, you know, and it's never ideas are not part of any democratic process. I mean, I know there's such a thing as ballot initiatives, but I mean, the real plans are made behind closed doors of rooms that you and I are not in.
But don't you think it hasn't been centralized for long enough to really be evil?
If you have a system where a few people are trying to decide what's best for millions of strangers. The words good and evil really don't have that much punch for me
Fine.
Anymore. But it's definitely wrong that people are deciding for other people's children, forcing people's children to pay for this system.
I mean, clearly.
And then decide what's good for their children while they threaten to take their house if they won't pay for it.
I mean, clearly people know what's best for their own children.
Better than some academic in a university.
I mean, parents always know what's best for their children. They're the best to make decisions for their children on their education.
Yeah, until the child gets to an age where they can make their own decisions, I believe.
Okay, it depends. I mean, what's that age? We shouldn't go there.
There is no standard AC.
Do
you want to be central planner?
No, I don't want to be the central planner. And I know every child is different. Every family is different. Everybody has a different experience, which is why I think that choosing your child's school is so important.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like school choice is important. Because I feel like different options work for different people. Different people have different values, sets of values. Different people have different ideas about what's right for them. And they should be able to control their children's... I mean, really, you're controlling your child's destiny when you choose their school. Because think about how much time they spend there, right? And think about how much influence the people can have on your child that are around them, right? So you would choose those people very wisely.
Yeah.
You would say, I want the people that my children are around every day to be very kind, for example.
Yeah.
My ideas for my children would be that the people would be very kind and flexible and interesting. That they would spend their school day with people kind, interesting, and flexible. And so I would choose a school that had some maybe different kind of ideas, some active things going on, you know?
Yeah. Now, you're immersed in the political side of this a little bit. So how do you feel, like, let's say the State Department of Education, or even you can speculate on the Federal Department of Education, how do they feel about all of these alternative school models popping up?
It seems like it's more of a grassrootsy movement, actually, now.
Yeah.
Most of the state government, I mean, if they're more like Republican, then they tend to be a little more school choice open to that option.
Okay.
If they're, I mean, I hate to classify like that, but that really seems to be the way it is. It seems like conservative people are more interested in school choice and giving options to families. Probably because it actually saves money. It's kind of a fiscal issue, too, in a government when you're looking at it that way. Because if someone uses one of these scholarships, for example, to send their child to a private school, they may get a scholarship that averages $2,500. So they may use that $2,500 to pay for their child's tuition. They pay the rest of the tuition, right? The tuition at the school is maybe $3,500, right? So they pay the rest of the tuition. That child is not attending a public school, so the child is not costing, what, in Manchester, I think it's almost $12,000 per student.
Whoa.
So it's a fiscal issue, right?
Yeah.
And so the parents taking responsibility for their own children's education and sending them to a school that they choose with a small help of a scholarship saves, you know, like $12,000 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is for Republicans or conservatives, in some instances, it's just really a fiscal issue.
And how about
because
them?
Schools are so expensive.
Yeah, and do they probably recognize that there's a fair amount of waste as well?
I mean, it depends on who you talk to.
And how much they know. Now, what about the other side?
I mean, I don't know. Is there a lot of waste? I don't even have the authority. I mean, I couldn't say that with any great authority. I mean, I know that charter schools, you know, are cost less than standard public schools, about half, and they seem to do okay.
So, oh, and I would say that it's all...
And private schools do okay, charging, you know, $3,500 or $4,000 a year for a kid, sometimes $7,000 a year or $8,000, so it's still not 12. I mean, there's, like, prep schools that are more expensive.
Yeah. How would you feel if I said, I feel like it's all waste? Because people aren't... It's not real education that's happening in those schools. So it's 100% waste. And one of the reasons why I typically try to steer clear of the conversations about the pragmatics or the politics
yes.
of these things is because it's very easy to get put into a box where you're having the conversation that somebody else wants you to have and you can't focus on the real issues. I'm sure you kind of know what I mean.
I do. I do.
We are going to pick it up right there. If you want to join this conversation, 843-JOIN-SSP, School Sucks Live. My guest is Kate Baker. We're having a lively discussion, and we hope you'll participate. We will be right back. Hey, Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the School Sucks radio show, School Sucks Live. If you want to join our conversation, we're going to be all over the place tonight, but I am going to connect it back to what we've been talking about in the previous week. Kate might fight me on it a little bit.
I'll try.
Kate Baker is my guest tonight. She is about to be the executive director of the Network for Educational Opportunity. One of the stories that we were about to get into was going to be an example of some of the stuff that I've been talking about on the show pretty much the whole time, but really kind of turning up the volume on in recent weeks. And that was the centralization and systematization of education in the United States, which there was planning 100 years ago on how to bring the education of all children under the control of fewer people. It was really stepped up when the Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, was introduced.
And, well, wasn't that just in the 70s, though?
60s, yeah.
Yeah, so, right.
Really,
okay.
Through the early 1970s, yeah.
Okay.
And eventually this manifests in a thing about 10, 12 years ago called No Child Left Behind. Right?
It's true.
The brainchild of Ted Kennedy and George W. Bush, so you know it's good. Right? Bipartisan. Right?
It's funny because No Child Left Behind, everyone hates it now.
Yeah.
Everyone. Like, the Democrats hate it. Republicans hate it.
Yeah.
Libertarians just,
come on.
I mean, they are.
Was there a debate?
No.
Right.
I mean, everyone, the teachers hate it. Like, everybody hates it.
Why do you think the teachers hate it?
Because the tests show they're not doing well.
Right. And they also have to teach to the test, so it's kind of...
We don't have to.
But then won't they get in trouble with the school because the school...
I mean, probably.
Right.
So I think if I was a teacher in a school that I wouldn't be able to teach to the test.
Right.
But I probably would be fired, I guess.
So,
maybe, for that.
Yeah. If you weren't tenured. Well, I mean, get tenured, you can do whatever you want.
Okay.
This is called New Hampshire Will Request a Waiver from No Child Left Behind.
Right.
By Sher Haberman. This was in Seacoast Online, July 22nd, just a couple of days ago, a few days ago, 2012.
And what makes me upset about this is that for New Hampshire to get a waiver from No Child Left Behind, which is a federal government mandate of testing of students and measurement, right?
A national standardization. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. For them to get a waiver, they have to actually implement more programs that manage teacher assessment and things like that. So it's almost like they get a waiver from one federal mandate, and it means they have to do something else.
So it's a catch-22.
A different federal mandate.
Yeah. So now it's like going into business with the mafia.
I mean, I just can't even, I read the article and I was like, forget it. Like, it's just...
Not a good thing at all. So there's no way out. There's no way out. It is like...
I mean, there's a way out, and you can put your children in a different kind of school. You can choose a private school, or you can homeschool. You can choose an alternative school
right.
for your children.
Now, was NCLB, was it imposed on all the states, or was funding dangled?
I'm sure funding was dangled. I've always just found this stuff so exasperating that I just even have trouble reading it.
All right. Well, I'm going to try and read it. I'm also prone to exasperation, so we'll see how I
okay.
do.
Okay. All right.
In June, Northampton school officials began a discussion of the steps that are mandated by the state since the school failed to meet its adequate yearly progress standard for a group of special education students under the federal No Child Left Behind Act. However, SAU 21 Superintendent Robert Sullivan told the members of the administration and the school board at that meeting there may not be a need to adhere to those requirements. Quote, the State Board of Education is drafting a letter to apply for a waiver from No Child Left Behind, Sullivan said. They're going to have discussions with the federal government in July, and something may be in place by October. On Friday, the State Deputy Commissioner of Education, Paul Leather, confirmed his department is again working to exempt the state from the provisions of the federal law. As of Thursday, 32 states had received waivers from the education accountability standards on the federal act.
Right, but the waivers mean... I mean, you should just keep reading, I guess.
But what you're saying is, spoiler alert, the waivers mean more regulatory control from the federal Department of Education.
Correct.
So it's like joining the mafia, deal with the devil type stuff. There's ways out for individuals, right?
Yes.
But from fixing education on the state level, and this goes back to what you do, right? Because I want to be clear that one of the reasons why I've always been so vehemently opposed to political action is because
Fine.
It's like saying that we can save this system. And that's not what you're saying, though. That's
I'm
not
what
really,
you're saying. I mean, I am saying that by implementing school choice in New Hampshire will introduce more competition.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that will have a positive impact on the entire education system in the state, because currently our public schools do have a you know, monopoly, really.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there are other schools you can choose from, but tuition is a barrier for many families, right?
Right.
So if somebody wants to choose to send their child to a school that costs $7,000, or they can send their child to the public school to which they're assigned geographically,
mm-hmm.
and they only earn enough money to pay for their like car and their rent and their food, and they don't have that $700, which would be like $700 a month, right?
Yeah.
If you split it up into 10 monthly payments for a school tuition, right? So say you don't have an extra $700 a month.
Right.
Which most people don't.
Most people certainly
right?
don't.
Then they send their children to the standard, you know, public school that's in their neighborhood.
Okay.
And so that school is governed by these rules, you know. So I think, again, adding school choice gives that family an opportunity to pick something else, to pick a school that No Child Left Behind doesn't control.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, and it takes, it took political action to do that. I mean, it actually took a piece of legislation to be introduced
yeah.
into the Senate and the House, and for them to vote on it. And for there to be enough people to vote for it, actually, I mean, to boot, there was enough votes to have it pass, and then the governor vetoed it because he doesn't like this legislation. So he vetoed it, and then the legislature had to override the veto. So that's a really extensive political process that it went through to exist, to give that family who would otherwise just have to send their child to the neighborhood school controlled by No Child Left Behind.
Yeah.
You know, although now they're getting a waiver for No Child Left Behind, remember?
Yeah, and it matters to that. It matters to that family. It matters to that child.
I mean, the success, possible future success of that child, definitely.
So, well, I think it's nice to be idealistic, like I have been in the past about the future. We live in a world that is controlled by these people. Like when you see blue lights in the rearview mirror,
you have to pull over,
you know,
yeah.
or something worse is going to happen.
There's the laws that say you have to send your child to a school.
Yeah.
I mean, you can homeschool.
Right.
You know, but if you're not a homeschooler, then the law says if your child's 6 years old, they have to go to a school. So you have to choose if you work full time and you feel like you can't homeschool, you have to choose a school. So you have to pay for your child to go to a private school, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now I can help with that with a scholarship. That'd be really nice, right? Don't you think?
Sure.
For families
sure.
that couldn't afford it. Or you have to send your child to that school that's in your neighborhood that you're geographically assigned to.
But when most people look at this situation, especially if they're struggling financially, they see a real absence of options right now. So what's important about what your organization is trying to do, in addition to starting new schools and creating the scholarships, is maybe in a couple of years when people look out at this landscape of education, they'll say, there are things I can do.
Yes.
Versus just like, I have to be a homeschool teacher, which I don't feel like I'm qualified to do because I went to public school and they told me I was an idiot.
No.
Or I can send them to the public school. So this is School Sucks Live. We will continue with Kate Baker in hour two. We'd love to hear from you. 843, join SSP. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is Brad. I'm here tonight with our old friend, Kate Baker.
Hello.
Hey.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, Kate. And we are going to go right back to the phone. We have Renee. You know what she does for a living? She's a public school teacher. Renee, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. So you've been listening to our show and you want to join the conversation, which I'm excited about. What are your thoughts so far?
I'm more on your side a little bit
okay.
than on Kate's.
Never! You're on Brett's side?
Yeah, you'd think because I'm a public school teacher, I'm in the system.
Let's hear it, Renee. Let's hear it.
So just if you're just joining us, Kate has staked out a more moderate position on these issues than I have.
It's not that moderate. I mean, some people think I'm pretty radical.
Oh, no. I mean, like, compared to the mainstream. Compared to me, you're moderate.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the mainstream,
yeah.
you're insane.
Fine.
You have the foil hat on compared to the mainstream
debate
on
this. I mean, totally.
Okay, so, Renee, I'm glad to hear that. Go ahead.
Well, I actually teach special education, too, but I was listening to what you were saying earlier about, like, the private and public schools and having people going into the private schools and paying. I know, Kate, you were talking about, like, having vouchers and stuff for people that want to send their kids to private school, which I'm totally for, because actually my parents sent me to a private school when I was going through school.
Lucky, good.
So
yeah, lucky.
Maybe. I was lucky, but, I mean, not everyone's fortunate like that, which I'm so for. Like, if I had a kid, I would probably homeschool it before I would even send it through any kind of system.
I agree.
But what I was thinking was, if I had a kid and I was able to put them through public school, or not public school, for private school, like, I'd rather homeschool them, but I'm still paying taxes to pay for other people's kids.
Like, it's true.
If everyone would not have to pay taxes, how many more people would put their kids even through private school or homeschool them, because they wouldn't have having to pay for other people's kids?
Well, and you know what? Like, somebody like me, thinking. Somebody like me might actually just pay for other people's kids because they want to.
Well, no.
Because
well,
there were kids that
right.
needed
like,
it or whatever, you know?
Kids that are not yeah. kids, but like parents or adults that want to pay for the people. I mean,
or help out. Sure. Yeah, of course.
For that.
Right.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, I mean, there's people now that donate and still pay taxes. So imagine how many people would donate if they didn't have to pay taxes.
Well, a lot. And I also find that it's kind of unfair that I make more money than people that would have to pay for my children to go to school. So if somebody works really like at a job, like, I mean, say they work at McDonald's and that's their full-time mm-hmm. job and that's their only income, then they have to pay for my children to go to school when, say I could afford it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, no, that's, I mean...
So it goes both ways. You know, people say that, yeah. you know, well, people wouldn't help poor children to go to school. And of course they would. I mean, people would mm-hmm. donate to help children any day of the week. But yet people that have less than others have to pay for those people.
We also
the wealthy
have to,
also get a free ride, you know?
We also
so
have
just
to
fascinating,
recognize
fascinating system.
That the cost of education, just like the cost of higher education, the cost of health care, is severely distorted and inflated by the fact that the government participates
right, of course.
In those sectors of the economy so yeah. much.
I mean, look at a private school's tuition. It's probably half.
Right.
Or less the cost of a public school's annual per child cost.
So this
yeah,
is
good
a
point.
This is another thing that the public school apologists do when they put you in the box where they're comfortable having the conversation, and they say it costs $17,000 a year to educate a child
yeah.
in this country. Do you think poor people can come up with $17,000 a year to educate their child? And that's
right when it doesn't really cost that.
Complete nonsense. It right. doesn't cost anything near that. That's inflated by you know, the NEA and all of the waste and any government bureaucracy, which just diminishes in quality and increases in waste and inefficiency every year. But hey, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is too radical for you, Renee, but I think that the public schools in America are the government's most successful program ever. Year
no,
after
I agree.
Year,
I completely agree.
They
like,
pump
if I,
out.
If I could at this moment, like, find another, like, I like to work with kids. Like, that's my thing.
Aww,
and especially
yeah.
kids who have special needs. Like, if
right.
I could work with them without being part of the government and get the same kind of benefit that I get, I totally would. Like, I,
yeah.
that's,
Renee,
do
you
do that.
Think that, like, we just worked through this, we just got a school choice tax credit program here in New Hampshire. It's different from a voucher, and I don't really want to go through the whole thing, but do you think that our school choice program introducing competition improves public schools?
Well, any kind of competition would benefit. I mean, because
right
now,
is a public school teacher,
I remember
Renee.
You saying yeah, earlier tonight that the government and schools has a huge monopoly, so...
They do, yeah. Okay,
any kind of competition is going to benefit.
Great.
Now, when you think about how this institution works, though, I mean, aren't they just going to use the state to fight against competition? Like, I mean, aren't they just going to try? I mean, when you think about how powerful some of the interests are, isn't it? I'm not saying that it's impossible, and I'm not saying it's not worth trying, and I'm not saying
I mean,
it's
I'd
not
like
a noble effort.
I'd like to climb mountains where the rocks come down and crash in my face, and I just keep climbing, and the rocks are coming down, and they're smashing. So, yeah, I mean, it's not easy working on changing
right.
a system that's so ingrained in a culture at this point. I mean, people are so dependent on... even just public schools, you know, they're sending
oh, yeah.
their children there. They're so comfortable with it. I mean, it's changing something that from when we were a kid, oh, well, it worked okay when I was a kid, so it's okay for my kid. I mean, things like
mm-hmm.
that, those kinds of changes are very slow, I think, to
yeah.
happen.
Yeah, and I think they have to tell
so
themselves
Brett kinda
stories.
Brett kind of makes fun of me for doing this work, but I'm going to do it all the time.
No, I mean,
I don't care.
It's different from it's different from the work that I do. I get frustrated sometimes, and I said, I think the segment before, that kids don't, kids who go to these upper middle class and upper class schools in these wealthy areas don't know anything either. They don't know what they're capable of knowing. They have
okay.
been miseducated.
Fine.
They have been schooled. They and schooling is you know, a diminishment of individual.
I mean, I was
potential.
Really bored. I was really bored in school.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But when I talk about the government school system as the most successful program, state program ever, it's successful for what it is supposed to do. What I believe it was set up to do. What I believe the Federal Department of Education and the Federal Department of Labor wants it to do. It wants to pump out people who are, I would never argue that it's good, but it's successful for what it was set up to do and what it continues to do and what they're trying to perfect it to do, which is to pump out people who are dependable because they conform and they're obedient.
I mean, it kind of depends on their parents, though, don't you think, too? I mean, you might have a child that goes to a school that they want them to be dependent and conform, but the parents encourage the child to think.
We're going to talk about that more in a minute. Renee, hang with us, will you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, this is School Sucks Live, 843. Join SSP. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. This is Brad, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. We got a couple segments left. If you want to give us a call, we do still have time. The number is 843-JOIN-SSP. Hey, I really hope you're watching on our live stream, schoolsucksproject.com/live. And you can also join our chat, which is pretty lively tonight. People are typing in the chat. I would like to see a lot more people in the chat. I'd like this show to... One of the reasons why we started doing the live show was to have a more interactive experience. We're going to jump back to the phone right now. We have Renee on the line. She is a public school teacher. Renee, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So did you have any other additional thoughts about what we had been discussing tonight from, you know, your position seeing this in the schools as a special ed teacher?
I'd love for you to just talk about No Child Left Behind a little bit and how people feel about that.
Well, I will in a second. I just want to really quick touch up on base about like what Brett had said before about I understand how the system with education is doing what it meant to do. Like, it's the most successful program because it's creating obedient people in society. Like, and that's what, of course, they want. They want people obeying what they say. And the school system's basically the easiest way to do it because they're, in a sense, corrupting young minds. And like they say, when you learn language, you should learn it when you're young. So when you're in a school system, they teach you, follow the rules. If you don't do that, you're going to get this consequence. And if you, you know, so and so. I just kind of wanted to state that.
Mm. Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, no offense to anybody who's religious out there, but the state, the church, and the cigarette companies, that's how they get you. You know, they know when you're young,
completely agree.
That's how it's done. So you're absolutely right. And obviously a tremendous amount of research has gone into this. This isn't just the kind of thing that a person says. This isn't loose circumstantial evidence. I highly recommend people check out the work of John Taylor Gatto. If you like videos and DVDs, there is a brand new DVD that is out that's available for my friends at tragedyandhope.com. It is called A Weekend with John Taylor Gatto, The Ultimate History Lesson. And I also recommend that people check out his book, pass around his book. It's a beautiful book. It's called The Underground History of American Education. I think it should have been called The Underground History of American Schooling.
There are some schools that are okay and good.
Sure. And there's a big difference.
Oh, no, yeah,
I mean, like
course.
Sudbury
there
model,
is.
For example.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's some schools that are good.
Right. And what Kate is trying to do, and why I think this is worth pointing out, is that, you know, everybody is different. And some people might benefit. Like, my ideal is unschooling. So I wish that that was just best for everybody, but it might not be.
I mean, what works for you, right?
Right.
There for might you to be... teach, be autodidactic, to
yes.
teach yourself, sure.
Because unschooling is like how adults learn, but for kids. It's like treating kids like adults, if you can imagine.
I think respect is a big, big part of it, though, the quality of an education that
sure.
one might get.
Yeah, yeah. And I also think that some people might benefit from a more structured environment, from having mentors, from having teachers, depending on what their goals are. But I mean, even when kids are very young, like the Sudbury model of school, I'm not crazy about, you know, it's democratic thing. But other than that, yeah.
Education should be more individualized than anything. Like, I mean, ultimately, you don't want to waste kids' time.
Agreed.
I mean, if they already know something, then, like, that's the thing with public education. Like, they're so focused on, well, this is not on the test, so we're not going to teach that. Or we'll teach science and social studies after standardized testing because, well, they're not getting tested. They're only getting tests on math and reading.
Oh, man.
And that's frustrating because, no offense, there's a lot of kids that love science and doing those hands-on experiences, and that's not fair to them because, you know, they're still in this, like, needing an education, too. So that's where I'm kind of like, this testing is stupid because then, like, I teach special education. So I have kids that are in seventh grade, but they read a second grade level, but they have to take a seventh grade standardized test at the end of the year, but they can't read that crap. Like, it's not fair to them. Like, that's where the whole thing comes in, is it's not about the kids anymore. It's about the money that the school's going to get based on the test scores that they receive.
Oh yeah, at the top level, I stand firmly by all of these things that I'm saying, and like people throw a word around like conspiracy, like that automatically discredits some kind of an assertion. Two or more people planning behind closed doors is a conspiracy.
Fine.
So people have decided in the Department of Labor, at the Federal Department of Education, in the Rockefeller Board of Education, in the halls of academia, how education, quote unquote, which is really schooling, should be disseminated in this country. Yeah, fine. That's a conspiracy. Okay. But on the service provider level, once you get out of academia, once you get out of the central planning places, the Department of Education, the Department of Labor, you get down to past the state school board and into districts and into schools. On the service provider level, it gets very bureaucratic where it's all just about paperwork. From my experience in working in places like this, like the highest ideal was to like do all the paperwork.
Like homework? Yeah. Are you talking about for the kids?
No. I'm talking about
for the adults.
The bureaucracy. It's all just paperwork. And I used to do No Child Left Behind tutoring years ago. It was one of the most soul-sucking things I ever took part in for myself and for those poor children who just like, oh, you're not good at something. Well, let's get you really excited about it while you're 8. We'll keep you after school, and then we'll do it for another hour, and then you'll love it.
That's terrible.
You excited about gym by making you change in front of other kids and climb ropes. I know I'm going back to my own school days, but the point I'm trying to make is that once you get down to the service provider level, everything is very bureaucratic anyway, and most of the people, this is what I was saying to Kate before the show, most of the people who work on that level, like the fact that you understand this stuff, Renee, and you put forward an idea, like something as radical as like, wow, kids' time actually matters too, you are really in the minority as far as what you do. You would agree, right?
Yeah. Well, they're starting this new program now, starting with like if you're in third grade at where I work at, they're starting this new thing that if you don't get approaches on the standardized test that they give every year in April or March or where it depends on where you're at, then you will be held back a year because you did not get that. And they think that being held back a year is going to help you.
Every study they've ever done on that shows that holding kids back has only a negative effect on
why
them.
Why would they hold...
Exactly.
Yeah. What would be the rationale?
Every study.
Renee, can you just repeat that? What would be the rationale for holding the kid back?
There is no rationale. They think that it will be beneficial to them because they'll get another year of that curriculum in their system, essentially, whatever.
If
but
they didn't do well enough.
No, it's not
sense.
About what. It's not what you teach. It's how you teach it to them. Like if you're not teaching to the child, if you're not like, cause there's children that are very visual. There's children that are very auditory. If you're not teaching to that child's needs, it doesn't matter how many times you teach it. And that's what they don't get. And so there's this whole system they're starting now.
Teaches
in third grade, if they don't pass this test, if they don't get approaches on the standard test in April when they give it, then they will be held back a year. Except if they're special ed. If they're special ed, the parents can decide.
Renee, hold on right there. We'll bring you back for the last segment.
Oh, okay.
This is School Sucks Live. We will be right back. Which one?
Okay, let me give
it. Sure. Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. My guest tonight has been Kate Baker. This is our last segment.
Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you, Kate. We've had a good time. Kate is going to be the new executive director of, give us the organization one time.
Network for Educational Opportunity, and you can go to networkforeducation.org to get more information about what we're doing.
Excellent. And this is something that, for the record, we've kind of maybe been a little bit vague on this, but this is something that I support.
Thank you.
I know where Kate stands, and I know what Kate's trying to do. And Kate saves kids.
Aw, thanks. So, I like kids, and I like education and teaching.
Yeah.
I have some fun times with doing things like that, and I think that kids should be an environment that's enriching for them, an environment that their parents choose for them, because parents know their kids best. Again, I'm going to say that again. Parents know their kids best.
Now, that's
are in the best possible position to choose their children's education. I think possibly, I think that because I've worked with groups of parents who have also started schools for their, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm not just talking about parents saying, you know, this, that, or the other. I mean, these are people that really get what I'm talking about. People really get it.
Okay,
I think parents
so
get it.
Repeat that line about parents again, because I want to make sure.
Parents are in the best possible position to choose what education is right for their child.
Meaning that they're in a better position than anyone else.
They're in the best possible position, yes.
If they have to choose a school.
Or homeschooling.
Okay.
They are the best ones to make those determinations.
So the comment in the chat was a little bit of a misstatement then. It says,
okay,
the position that parents know what's best for their children is patently absurd.
I mean,
absurd.
I would stand by that too.
I don't. You see,
I mean, I would totally, as I would say that parents are in the best possible position to make decisions for their children too.
Okay, so parents, I think parents know better. Thoughtful parents, because we agree there are terrible parents, there are nightmarish parents, there are you know, these evangelicals.
I mean, I mean that's not up to me.
No, what I'm not
someone's
saying it
religion
be up to me.
Is not up to me, whether
no.
they're teaching their child that or not.
I'm not saying,
I mean, how
I
dare
want...
I presume that I know better than someone else, frankly.
And I'm not recommending like that the state get involved in that situation.
Of course you would never recommend
no,
that, but
course.
I'm just saying, how dare I presume that I know better than someone for their own children. I would never presume to know better.
I understand the argument, but I also think that to say...
It's not an argument. I mean, it's a fact. I know what's best for my own kids.
Better than anybody else.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I would never presume to know better than another parent for their own children.
Sure. And that's fine. And I think that's fair. But what I'm saying is there's a slight difference here, knowing what is actually best for them.
I mean, what you think is best, or I mean...
Right. So raising them with love and with respect and with
clearly.
Compassion and
I
without
mean,
psychological terrorism
I mean,
of extreme religious views. So like the famous idiot, Bill Maher, one time, host of Real Time with Bill Maher.
He's funny.
Once, he can be. I mean, he's kind of a hack.
I thought he was funny.
But one time he had a great line written for him that he delivered very competently. And the line was, people always say, I can't talk about parenting because I don't have any children.
And I mean, I disagree.
He said, I don't have any fish, but I know you're not supposed to put Mountain Dew in the tank.
Ooh.
Right?
That's a good one.
I thought that was a great line.
That's a good one.
Now, there are people out there.
But if you think you know better than somebody does about their own child, then aren't you doing the same thing that the government's doing?
No, because they're forced. I'm not saying, like, I might know better, but I'm not going to force my will. Like, I might know better I will say right now, I've seen people in my family do things with kids where I facepalmed. And like, I wanted to say, please don't do that again. Even like, don't say because I said so. Don't threaten kids.
I mean,
with time
it's
out.
Sometimes it's funny,
but it's not good for kids.
Okay,
so
I agree with you.
I know in that situation, I know what's better for that child than apparently they do, but I can't do anything about it. If I was the government, I would pull out a gun or at least start waving a gun around, you know, like, oh, this isn't here to actually like shoot you. It's just kind of here to get you to do what I want you to do. Well, I'm waving a gun around. Then I'm more like the government.
I still think parents are better at choosing a school or educational environment than, say, you being assigned to your geographic public school that you're assigned to.
Oh, sure. Then strange people with beards and sweater vests at the University of Illinois
Yes.
Education department who haven't worked 5 minutes.
Not everyone agrees with us on that, you know. I mean, my view is kind of radical. I mean, to you, my view sounds very moderate, but my view is kind of radical that parents should choose their children's school is a radical view.
But I'm so much closer.
The education experts, in a lot of instances, people think should choose the children's school.
Sure, sure. But what I'm saying is, like, I think it's something.
Parents are education experts.
What I'm hoping is.
Where I'm at.
I'm hoping that the conversation evolves beyond just resigning ourselves to, oh, well, that's their kids, right? Because that's what people say. This is how people talk themselves out of intervening when they see a human being being physically abused. Okay. So when people like see a child being abused by a parent.
I mean, I make a noise, but.
Most people don't do anything because they say, oh, that's their child.
Oh.
Like it's their property. And I hope that the discussion about children and families and parenting and education can evolve beyond children as property.
Fine.
You know, where someday we do say the kind of standards that we have for adults, like it's not okay to beat up an adult who does something that you don't like, would also apply to human beings that are just smaller
and
younger.
That respect is a big part of what's missing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I
agree with you.
That's all I'm not trying to obviously impose my will or say that I know what's best for everybody. Maniacs say stuff like that with sandwich signs on, screaming at trees. That's what I always say. If you find some crazy person yelling and accosting people on the street and saying, I know what's best for you and I know what's best for everybody. If you just put a suit on them and gave them a sedative, you'd have a presidential candidate. You know, you would.
Can I tell you a story now?
Yeah.
Okay, I used to help, you know, work with parents in that support group for gifted children.
Right.
And again, I'm not going to take a position where I know the right answer for a family, but people would come and tell me these stories of what would happen to their children in the school that they were in. And there was a woman that came to the meeting and she said, every morning when I try to bring my child to school, they cry. Every day when I bring them to school because they don't like it. And they say the other kids are mean to them and they come home. And she would tell me this for like, I mean, it was about a week and then it was another week and then it was another week. And I said, finally, I said, listen, maybe the kid is right. Maybe they really don't like it and the other kids are mean. Have you considered just not bringing the kid to the school? And this was a revolutionary idea to the parent that because the child was having such a difficult time every day, crying, not wanting to go, feeling upset about going. It was revolutionary to the parent that they should not, maybe consider not bringing the child there.
Yeah.
And I shared that information with a lot of people. I mean, people would have difficulties and I would say, well, have you considered just like not bringing them there anymore and trying to look for a different type of thing to do, either homeschooling or a different school or something different instead of, but sometimes the parents would accept it, or at least for a little while, they would continue to bring the child there, even if they were really upset every day, you know, instead of looking for an option or something like that. What?
I like that story.
Well, it's real.
I just realized this whole time we had Renee on hold.
Oh, I'm sorry, Renee.
Hey, Renee.
No, it's fine. No, I was listening. I was taking it all in.
Hey, we're about to run out of time here in less than 1 minute. So I wanted to thank you very much for your input tonight. And I do hope that you will, as you continue to listen to the show, you'll give us a call in the future, because I would love to hear from you again, and I'd like to get updates on what's going on in these schools.
Yes, no problem. I'll totally update you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Have a good night. Sorry I forgot about you there.
Yes. No, you are fine. Have a great night.
You too. And Kate.
Yes.
What a wonderful night it has been. I've enjoyed this very much.
I'm glad I had fun, too.
You did?
Yeah, totally.
All right. You want to give us your website one more time?
Sure. Network for Educational Opportunity. It's www.networkforeducation.org. People can find out what we're up to.
Excellent.
Helping families find good education for their kids.
Super. And you guys are going to hear from Kate on this show again in the future. So we do a little thing called the after show. I'm going to let Kate go home, and I'm going to pick up our friend Brian Hagen down in Kansas, and we're going to explore some interesting semi-educational to non-educational topics from about 12:15 to who knows when. So stick with us. If you're on LRN, jump over to Ustream, schoolsucksproject.com/live, and we'll be getting started with that very soon. Thank you very much for listening to the regular show. Have a good night, and take care.